Hours after my battle, I dream my nightmare. I'm 5 years old, climbing into my mom's old Lexus. Daddy went to heaven almost a year ago. Aunt Pooh's been gone a couple of months. She went to live with her and mommy's auntie in the projects. I lock my seatbelt in place, and mommy holds my overstuffed backpack toward me. Her arm has all these dark marks on it. She once told me she got them because she wasn't feeling well. "You're still sick, Mommy?" I ask. She follows my eyes and rolls her sleeve down. "Yeah, baby," she whispers. My brother gets in the car beside me, and Mommy says we're going on a trip to somewhere special. We end up in our grandparents' driveway. Suddenly, Trey's eyes widen. He begs her not to do this. Seeing him cry makes me cry. Mommy tells him to take me inside, but he won't. She gets out, goes around to his side, unlocks his seatbelt, and tries to pull him out the car. But he digs his feet into the seat. She grabs his shoulders. "Trey, I need you to be my little man," she says, her voice shaky. "For your sister's sake, okay?" He looks over at me and quickly wipes his face.
I'm okay, little bit,"
he claims. But the cry hiccups break up his words.
"It's okay."
He unlocks my seatbelt, takes my hand, and helps me out the car. Mommy hands us our backpacks.
"Be good, okay?" she says. "Do what your grandparents tell you to do."
"When are you coming back?" I ask. She kneels in front of me. Her shaky fingers brush through my hair, then cut my cheek.
"I'll be back later. I promise."
"Later when?"
"Later. I love you. Okay?"
She presses her lips to my forehead and keeps them there for the longest. She does the same to Trey, then straightens up.
"Mommy, when are you coming back?"
I ask again. She gets in the car without answering me and cranks it up. Tears stream down her cheeks. Even at 5, I know she won't be back for a long time. I drop my backpack and chase the car down the driveway.
"Mommy, don't leave me!"
But she goes into the street, and I'm not supposed to go into the street.
"Mommy!"
I cry. Her car goes, and soon, it's gone.
"Mommy! Mom!"
"Brianna!" I jolt awake. Jay's sitting on the side of my bed.
"Baby, are you okay?"
I try to catch my breath as I wipe the dampness from my eyes.
"Yeah. Were you having a nightmare?"
"A nightmare that's a memory. Jay really did leave me and Trey at our grandparents' house. She couldn't take care of us and her drug habit, too. That's when I learned that when people die, they sometimes take the living with them. I saw her in the park a few months later, looking more like a red-eyed, scaly-skinned dragon than my mommy. I started calling her Jay after that. There was no way she was my mom anymore. It became my own habit that was hard to break. Still is. It took 3 years and a rehab stint for her to come back. Even though she was clean, some judge decided that she could only have me and Trey every other weekend and on some holidays. She didn't get us back full-time until 5 years ago, after she got her job and started renting this place. 5 years back with her, and yet I still dream about her leaving us. It hits me out of nowhere sometimes, but Jay can't know I dream about it. It'll make her feel guilty, and then I'll feel guilty for making her feel guilty. "It was nothing," I tell her. She sighs and pushes up off the bed.
"Okay, go ahead and get up. We need to have a little talk before you head to school."
About what?
How you could tell me you won in the ring, but you couldn't tell me your grades are dropping faster than Pooh's sagging-ass pants.
Huh?
Huh? She mocks and shows me her phone. I got an email from your poetry teacher, Mrs. Murray. The conversation in ACT prep. Aw, hell. Honestly, I forgot. I was floating after my battle, for real. That feeling when the crowd cheered for me is probably what getting high is like, and I'm addicted. I don't know what to say to my mom. I'm sorry?
Sorry nothing. What's your main responsibility, Bree?
Education over everything, I mumble.
Exactly. Education over everything, including rapping. I thought I made that clear.
It's not that big of a deal, though, dang. Jay raises her eyebrows.
Girl, she says, in that slow way that sends a warning. You better check yourself.
I'm just saying, some parents wouldn't make a big deal out of this.
Well, gosh golly darn, I'm not some parents. You can do better. You've done better, so do better. Only C's I want to see are pictures of C's. The only D's I better see are D's grades improving. We clear?
I swear, she's so hard on me.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Get ready for school.
She leaves.
God damn, I mutter under my breath, killing my vibe first thing in the morning.
You ain't got no vibe,
she hollers from the hall. I can't ever say shit in this house. I get up, and almost immediately I want to get back under my covers. That first feel of the chill in the air is always the hardest. Moving around helps. The ladies of hip-hop watch from the wall beside my bed. I've got some of everybody, from MC Light to Missy Elliott to Nicki Minaj to Rhapsody. The list goes on and on. I figure if I want to be a queen, queens should watch over me when I sleep. I throw my Vader hoodie back on and slip on my not Tims. Nah, they're not the real deal. The real deal costs a water bill. These cost $20 at the swap meet. I try to pull them off like they are Tims, except... Shit, I hiss. Some of the black leather on one has rubbed off, revealing white cloth. This happened to the other last week. I take a black Sharpie and go to work. Ratchet, but I gotta do what I gotta do. Soon I'm getting some real Tims, though. I've been saving the money I make from my snack dealing. Aunt Pooh buys my stock and lets me keep the profits. It's the closest Jay will let her get to giving me money. Thanks to the kids at Midtown, I'm about halfway to a pair of brand new Tims. Technically, we're not supposed to sell stuff on school campus, but I've gotten away with it so far. Shout out to Michelle Obama. That health kick of hers made the school take the good stuff from the vending machines and made my business very lucrative. A horn blows outside. It's 7:15, so it's gotta be Mr. Watson, the bus driver. He claims that even when he's dead, he'll be on time. If his zombie ass pulls up in the bus one day, I am not climbing on board.
I'm gone,
I call to Jay. Trey's bedroom door is closed. He's probably knocked out. He gets home from work when I'm almost gone to bed, and he leaves for work when I'm at school. A short yellow bus waits out front. Midtown the school is in Midtown the neighborhood, where people live in nice condos and expensive historic houses. I live in Garden High zone, but Jay says there's too much bullshit and not enough people who care there. Private school's not in our budget, so Midtown School of the Arts is the next best thing. A few years ago, they started busing students in from all over the city. They called it their diversity initiative. Jay calls it their... They needed grant money, and wouldn't nobody give it to them for just a bunch of white kids initiative. You've got rich kids from the north side.
middle-class kids from downtown and midtown, and hood kids like me. There's only 15 of us from the garden at midtown, so they send a short bus for us. Mr. Watson wears his Santa hat and hums along with the Temptations version of Silent Night that plays on his phone. Christmas is less than 2 weeks away, but Mr. Watson has been in the holiday spirit for months.
Hey, Mr. Watson, I say.
Hey, Brianna. Cold enough for you?
Too cold.
Aw, ain't no such thing. This the perfect weather.
For what, freezing your ass off?
If you say so, I mumble, and head toward the back. I'm his third pickup. Shayna's dozing up front, her head just barely touching the window. She's not about to mess up her bun, nap or not. All the 11th grade dancers look exhausted these days. Dion nods at me from his seat in the very back, his saxophone case propped up beside him. Dion's a junior too, but since he's in the music program, I only ever see him on the bus.
Hey, Bree, let me get a Snickers.
I sit a couple of rows ahead of him. You got Snickers money? He tosses me a balled up dollar. I toss the candy bar back to him.
Thanks. You killed it in the ring.
You know about that?
Yeah. Saw the battle on YouTube. My cousin texted it to me. He said you got next.
Dang. I got folks talking like that?
I definitely had the ring talking. I could barely get out of there last night without somebody telling me how dope I was. It was the first time I realized I can do this. I mean, it's one thing to want to do something. It's another to think it's possible. Rapping has been my dream forever, but dreams aren't real. You wake up from them, or reality makes them seem stupid. Trust, every time my fridge is almost empty, all of my dreams seem stupid. But between my win and D-Nice's deal, anything feels possible right now. Or I'm that desperate for things to change. The garden passes by my window. Older folks water their flowers or bring out their trash cans. A couple of cars blast music on high. Seems normal, but things haven't been the same since the riots. The neighborhood doesn't feel nearly as safe. Not that the garden was ever a utopia, hell no. But before I only worried about GDs and crowns. Now I gotta worry about the cops too? Yeah. People get killed around here. And nah, it's not always by the police. But Jay says this was like having a stranger come in your house, steal one of your kids, and blame you for it because your family was dysfunctional, while the whole world judges you for being upset. Zane, a senior with a nose ring, gets on the bus. He's stuck up as hell. Sonny says Zane thinks he's fine, but Sonny and I also agree that he is fine. It's an internal struggle, being annoyed by his ass and being mesmerized by his face. And if I'm real, being mesmerized by his ass. Boy's got a donk. He never speaks to me, but today he goes,
"Your battle was fire, Ma."
Well, goddamn. Thanks. How many people have seen it? Asia, the freshman, saw it. She gives me props soon as she gets on. So do Kiana, Nevaeh, and Jabari, the sophomores. Before I know it, I'm the talk of the short bus.
You got skills, Bree. I was geeking the whole time. Bet she couldn't beat me in a battle. On God, bruh.
That little dig is from Curtis Brinkley, this short, wavy-haired, brown-skinned boy who puts a lot of lies on God, bruh. In fifth grade, he claimed that Rihanna was his cousin, and that his mom was on the road with her, working as her hairstylist. In sixth grade, he said his mom was on tour with Beyonce as her hairstylist. Really? His mom was in prison. She still is. Mr. Watson pulls up at Sonny's and Malik's houses. They live next door to each other, but they both come out of Malik's front door. I take off my snapback. My edges still need help, but I laid them as best as I could earlier. I put on some lip gloss, too.
It's stupid as hell, but I'm hoping Malik notices. I notice way too much about him. Like the way his eyes sometimes get this glint about them that makes me think he knows every secret there is about me. And he's cool with them all. Like the fact that he's fine, and the fact that he doesn't realize he's fine, which somehow makes him even finer. Like the way my heart speeds up every time he says, Breezy. He's the only one who calls me that. And when he says it, he stretches it slightly, in a way that nobody else can really imitate. Like he wants the name to only belong to him. All these feelings started when we were 10. I have this real clear memory of us wrestling in Malik's front yard. I was The Rock, and he was John Cena. We were obsessed with wrestling videos on YouTube. I pinned Malik down, and while sitting on top of him in his front yard, I suddenly wanted to kiss him. It freaked me out. So I punched him and said in my best The Rock voice, I'm laying the smackdown on your candy ass. Basically, I tried to ignore my sexual awakening by imitating The Rock. I was so weirded out by the whole thing. Those feelings didn't go away either. But I told myself over and over again that he's Malik, best friend extraordinaire, Luke to my Leia. Yet here I am, using my phone to check my Pink Pursuit lip gloss. Who comes up with these names? Hoping he'll see me some kind of way, too. Pathetic. Why won't you admit I whooped that ass? Sonny asks him as they climb on board. Like I said, my controller was acting funny, Malik claims. We got a rematch. Fine, I'll still whoop your... Bree! Sonny dances down the aisle to a beat nobody hears. When he gets close, he bows like he's worshiping me. All hail the ring queen! I laugh. Queen, I am not. Well, you killed it, Yoda. We slap palms and end with the Wakanda salute. Wakanda forever. Malik shrugs. I won't say I told you so, but I won't say I didn't tell you so either. That doesn't make sense, I tell him. Sonny sits on the seat in front of me. Nope. Malik plops down beside me. It's a double negative. No, Mr. Film Major, I say. As a literary arts major, I can assure that's just a mess. You basically said that you won't say you told me so. His eyebrows meet and his mouth drops slightly open. Confused Malik is so damn cute.
What?
Exactly. Stick with filmmaking, boo. Agreed, says Sonny.
Anyway, that battle was ridiculous, Bree. Except when you just stood there that first round, I was about to pull a Mariah Carey, I don't know her, on you.
I punch his arm, troll.
But seriously, you killed it, Sonny says. Miles, on the other hand, needs to stop rapping.
Malik nods.
He Jar Jar Binks'd that.
Malik insists that Jar Jar Binks should be a verb, adjective, and an adverb to describe whack stuff, because Jar Jar Binks is the worst character in the Star Wars universe.
Bruh, you know that's never gonna catch on, right?
Sonny asks him.
But it makes sense. Wanna say something is whack? Call it a Jar Jar Binks.
Okay, you're a Jar Jar Binks, Sonny says. Got it? Malik thumps Sonny's forehead. Sonny punches Malik's shoulder. They go back and forth, punching and swatting at each other. Totally normal. In fact, a Sonny and Malik fight is one of the few things guaranteed in life, right up there with death, taxes, and Kanye West rants. Sonny's phone buzzes, and suddenly Malik no longer exists. His face lights up almost as bright as the screen. I sit up a little and stretch my neck. Who you texting?
Dang, bitch. Nosy ass.
I stretch some more to try and see the name on the screen, but Sonny dims it so I can't. I only catch the heart eyes emoji next to the name. I raise my eyebrows.
Is there someone you'd like to tell me about, sir?
Sonny glances around, almost like he's afraid somebody heard me. Everybody's having their own conversations, though. Still, he says,
Later, Bree.
Considering how he's on edge, there must be a guy. When we were 11, Sonny came out to me. We were watching Justin Bieber perform at some awards show. I thought he was cute, but I wasn't obsessed with him like Sonny was. Sonny turned to me and blurted out, I think I only like boys. It was out of nowhere. Sorta. There were little things here and there that made me wonder, like how he'd print out pictures of Bieber and secretly carry them around. How he acted around my brother. If Trey liked something, Sonny suddenly loved it. If Trey spoke to him, Sonny blushed. And if Trey got a girlfriend, Sonny acted like it was the end of the world. But I can't lie. I didn't really know what to say at the time. So I just told him, okay, and left it at that. He told Malik not long after and asked if they could still be friends. Apparently Malik was like, long as we can still play PlayStation. Sonny told his parents too, and they've always been cool with it. But I guess sometimes he's afraid of how other people will act if they know. The bus pulls up at an intersection beside a cluster of bleary-eyed kids. Their breath turns to smoke around them as they wait for the bus to Garden High. Curtis lets his window down.
Hey, basics! Talk that shit you were saying yesterday!
School pride turns us into gangs. We call the kids from Garden Heights basics, 'cause we say they're basic as hell. They call us short bus nerds.
Man, fuck your little lollipop head looking ass,
a boy in a bubble vest says.
Bet you won't get off that bus and say shit to my face.
I smirk. Keandre tells no lies. He looks at me.
Hey, Bree, you did your thing in the ring, baby girl.
I let my window down. Some of the other kids nod or say, what up, Bree? If school pride makes us gangs, I'm neutral, thanks to my dad.
You saw the battle?
I asked Keandre.
Hell yeah! Props, queen!
See? Around the neighborhood, I'm royalty. Everybody shows love. But when the bus pulls up at Midtown, I'm nothing. At Midtown, you have to be great for anyone to notice you. Brilliant, actually. And it's like everybody's trying to outdo everyone else. It's all about who got the lead in this play or that recital, who won that award for their writing or their art, whose vocal range is the best. It's a popularity contest on steroids. If you're not exceptional, you're a nobody. I'm the exact opposite of exceptional. My grades are so-so. I don't win awards. Nothing I do is enough. I'm not enough. Except for when I'm too much for my teachers to handle and they send me to the principal's office. On the school steps, a couple of boys do the wipe-me-down dance as Miles goes swag, swag, swag on one of their phones. Don't know why they're torturing themselves with that garbage. So, I grip my backpack straps. What are y'all doing at lunch?
I've got SAT prep,
Sonny says. Damn, you're doing both? I ask. Sonny's more obsessed with this college stuff than Jay is. He shrugs.
Gotta do what I gotta do.
What about you? I ask Malik. And suddenly my heart beats super fast at the idea of lunch alone with him. But he frowns.
Sorry, Bree. Gotta go to the lab and work on this documentary.
He holds up his camera. Welp, so much for my idea. I probably won't see either of them until we get back on the bus. See, Sonny and Malik have their groups at Midtown. Unfortunately for me, Sonny and Malik are my group. When they're with their groups, I have nothing on top of being nobody. They're both pretty damn brilliant, too. Everybody in visual arts loves Sonny's graffiti pieces. Malik's won a couple of awards for his short films. I just gotta get through one more year in this place.
One more year of being quiet, unassuming Bree, who stays to herself as her friends get their glow-ups. Yeah. We get in line for security.
Think Long and Tate have calmed down since yesterday?
Sunny asks. Probably not. They're always power-tripping. Last week they put Curtis through an extra security screening, even though the metal detector didn't beep when he went through. They claimed they wanted to be sure.
I'm telling y'all, the way they do security is not normal,
Malik says.
My mom doesn't do people like this, and she deals with criminals.
Malik's mom, Aunt Shell, is one of the security guards at the courthouse.
Y'all do realize they've gotten worse since last year, right?
Says Malik.
Seeing that cop get away with murder probably made them think they're invincible, too.
You might be onto something, Malik X, says Sonny.
That's been our nickname for Malik since the riots. The whole situation shook him up. It shook me up, too, can't lie. But Malik's been on another level, always talking about social justice and reading up on stuff like the Black Panthers. Before the riots, the only Black Panther he cared about was T'Challa.
We need to do something, he says. This isn't okay.
Just ignore them, says Sonny.
They're more talk than anything.
Curtis goes through the metal detector with no problems. Then Shayna, Dion, the three sophomores, Zane. Next, it's Sonny, followed by Malik. I stroll through after him. The metal detector doesn't beep, but Long puts his arm out in front of me.
Go back.
Why? I ask.
Because he said so, says Tate.
But it didn't beep, I say.
I don't care, Long says. I told you to go back through.
Fine. I go through the metal detector again. No beep.
Hand over the bag,
Long says. Oh, shit. My candy stash. If they find it, I could get suspended for selling on campus. Considering how much I've been suspended over other stuff, shit, I may get expelled.
Hand over the bag,
Long says. I swallow. I don't have to-
Oh, you got something to hide?
Long says. No!
Put that camera away,
Tate tells Malik. He's got it out and pointed at us.
I can record if I want. Hand over the bag,
Long tells me. No!
You know what?
He reaches for my backpack strap, but I snatch it away. By the look that flashes across his eyes, I shouldn't have done that. He grabs my arm.
Give me that backpack!
I yank away. Get your hands off me! Everything happens in a blur. He grabs my arm again and pulls it behind me. The other one goes behind me, too. I try to yank and tug away, which only makes his grip tighter. Before I know it, my chest hits the ground first, then my face is pressed against the cold floor. Long's knee goes onto my back as Tate removes my backpack.
Yo, what the fuck?
Sonny shouts.
Get off of her!
Malik says, camera pointed at us.
You brought something in here, huh?
Long says. He wraps plastic around my wrists and pulls it tight.
That's why you didn't want us to see it, huh? You little hoodlum. Where's all that mouth you had yesterday?
I can't say a word. He's not a cop. He doesn't have a gun. But I don't want to end up like that boy. I want my mom. I want my dad. I want to go home. 5. I end up in Principal Rhodes' office. My arms are tied behind me. Long dragged me in here and made me sit down a few minutes ago. He's in Dr. Rhodes' office now. She told her secretary, Ms. Clark, to call my mom and keep an eye on me, like I'm the one who needs to be watched. Ms. Clark looks through my files on her computer for Jay's work number. Surprised she doesn't know it by heart by now. I stare straight ahead.
The office has inspirational posters on every wall. One is a complete lie. You can't control what other people do. You can only control the way that you react. No, you can't. Not when your arm is jerked behind you or you're lying on the floor with a knee in your back. You can't control shit then. Ms. Clark picks up her phone and dials. After a couple of seconds, she goes, "Hi, this is Midtown School of the Arts. May I speak to Mrs. Jada Jackson, please?" Jay answers the phones at Christ Temple, so I expect Ms. Clark to go right into explaining the situation to her. But she frowns. "Oh, I see. Thank you." She hangs up. Weird. What did my mom say? "I was told that your mother doesn't work there anymore. Is there another way to reach her?" I sit up as best as I can. "What? Should I try her cell phone or her home phone?" "Are you sure you called Christ Temple Church?" "Positive," Ms. Clark says. "Cell phone or home phone?" My heart stops. The Popkin Church. Jay only gets it when something bad happens. Did she lose her job? She couldn't have. Ms. Clark's got it wrong somehow. She probably called the wrong place and just doesn't realize it. Yeah, that's it. I tell Ms. Clark to try Jay's cell phone. About 15 minutes later, the office door flies open and Jay storms in. She's in her work clothes, so she must have left the church. "Brianna, what in the world happened?" She kneels in front of me and looks me over, almost like she did when she came back from rehab. Her eyes couldn't get enough of me. Now they examine every inch of me, except my hands. She whirls around on the secretary. "Why the hell is my daughter handcuffed?" Dr. Rhodes appears in her doorway. Her glasses take up most of her face, and her curly red hair is in a bun. She was the principal back when Trey went here, too. I met her at his freshman welcome night. She gave me this sugary sweet smile and said, "Hopefully in a few years you'll join us too." She didn't say there would be a security guard ranting in her office about those kids bringing that stuff into this school. The door was closed, but I heard him. Those kids. This school. Like one doesn't belong with the other. "Mrs. Jackson," Dr. Rhodes says, "may we please have a word in my office?" "Not until my daughter is released." Dr. Rhodes looks back over her shoulder. "Mr. Long, would you please release Brianna?" He lumbers out and removes the little scissors hanging from a clip on his waist. He grumbles, "Stand up." I do, and with one little snip, my hands are uncuffed. Jay immediately cups my cheeks. "Are you okay, baby?" "Mrs. Jackson, my office, please," Dr. Rhodes says. "You too, Brianna." We follow her in. The look she gives Long tells him to stay outside. My backpack sits on top of her desk. It's unzipped, revealing every pack of candy I had. Dr. Rhodes points at the two chairs in front of her. "Please have a seat." We do. "Are you going to tell me why my daughter was handcuffed?" Jay asks. "There was an incident, obviously. I will be the first to admit that the guards used excessive force. They put Brianna on the floor." "Threw," I mumble. "They threw me on the floor." Jay's eyes widen. "Excuse me? We've had issues with students bringing illegal drugs. That doesn't explain why they manhandled my child," says Jay. "Brianna was not cooperative at first." "It still doesn't explain it," Jay says. Dr. Rhodes takes a deep breath. "It will not happen again, Mrs. Jackson.
I assure you that there will be an investigation and disciplinary action will take place if the administration sees fit. However, Brianna may have to face disciplinary action as well. She turns to me. Brianna, have you been selling candy on campus? I fold my arms. I'm not answering that shit. And let her turn this around on me? Hell no. Answer her, Jay tells me.
It's only candy, I mumble.
Maybe so, says Dr. Rhodes. But it's against school policy to sell contraband on campus.
Contraband?
The only reason y'all found out about it is because Long and Tate like to go after the Black and Latinx kids.
Brianna, Jay says, it's not a warning. It's an I got this. She turns to Rhodes. Since when is candy contraband? Why did they come after my daughter in the first place?
The security guards have the right to conduct random searches. I can assure you that Brianna was not targeted.
Bullshit!
I don't even bite my tongue.
They always harass us.
It may seem that way.
It is that way.
Brianna, Jay says. That's a warning. She turns to the principal.
Dr. Rhodes, my son told me that the guards picked on certain kids more than others when he was here.
I don't think my children are making this up.
I'd hate to think you're saying that.
There will be an investigation, Dr. Rhodes says, so calmly it pisses me off. But I stand by what I said, Mrs. Jackson. The guards treat all of the students the same.
Oh, says Jay. They throw them all on the floor, huh?
Silence. Dr. Rhodes clears her throat. Again, Brianna was not cooperative. I was told she was argumentative and aggressive. This is not the first time we've had behavioral issues with her.
Here we go. What are you trying to say? Jay asks.
Today's behavior follows a pattern.
Yes, a pattern of my daughter being targeted.
Again, no one is targeting.
Do the white girls who make slick comments get sent to your office every other week, too?
Jay asks. Mrs. Jackson, Brianna is frequently aggressive.
Aggressive. One word, three syllables. Rhymes with excessive. I'm so excessive that I'm aggressive. Aggressive is used to describe me a lot.
It's supposed to mean threatening, but I've never threatened anybody. I just say stuff that my teachers don't like. All of them except Mrs. Murray, who happens to be my only Black teacher. There was the time in history class during Black History Month. I asked Mr. Kincaid why we don't ever talk about Black people before slavery. His pale cheeks reddened.
Because we're following a lesson plan, Brianna, he said.
Yeah, but don't you come up with the lesson plans? I asked.
I will not tolerate outbursts in class.
I'm just saying, don't act like Black people didn't exist before. He told me to go to the office. Wrote me up as being aggressive.
Fiction class. Mrs. Burns was talking about the literary canon, and I rolled my eyes because all the books sounded boring as shit. She asked if there was a problem, and I told her exactly that, just without saying as shit. She sent me to the office. I mumbled something under my breath on the way out, and she wrote me up for aggressive behavior. Can't forget the incident in my theater elective. We'd done the same scene 100 times. Mr. Ito told us to start from the top yet again. I sucked my teeth and went, oh my God, throwing my hands at my sides. My script flew from my grasp and hit him. He swore I intentionally threw it. That got me a 2-day suspension. That's all from this year. Freshman year and sophomore year were full of incidents, too. Now I've got another under my belt.
Per school policy,
Brianna will have to serve a 3-day suspension for selling banned items on school property without permission, Dr. Rhodes says. She zips up my backpack and hands it to me. We go into the hallway just as the bell for second period rings. Classroom doors open, and it seems like everybody and their mama pour into the halls. I get second glances I've never gotten before, and stares and whispers. I'm no longer invisible, but now I wish I was. I'm quiet on the ride home. Hoodlum. One word, 2 syllables. Can be made to rhyme with a lot of things. Synonyms, thug, delinquent, hooligan, lowlife, gangster, and, according to Long, Brianna. Can't no good come from this hoodlum. Nah, fuck that word. Fuck that school. Fuck all of this. I stare at what's left of the garden. We're on Clover Street, which used to be one of the busiest streets in Garden Heights. But ever since the riots, there's a bunch of charred rubble and boarded up buildings. The Mega Dollar Store was one of the first to get hit. Cellular Express got looted first and then burned down. Shop and Save burned down to the frame. And now we have to go to the Walmart on the edge of the garden or the little store over on the west if we want to get groceries. I'm a hoodlum from a bunch of nothing. Doubt they'll ever fix this mess, Jay says. It's like they want us to remember what happens when we step out of line. She glances over at me. You okay, Bookie? According to my granddaddy, Jacksons don't cry. We suck it up and deal with it. Doesn't matter how much my eyes burn. I didn't do anything wrong. No, you didn't, Jay says. You had every right to keep your backpack. But Bree, promise me, if that ever happens again, you'll do what they tell you to do. What? Bad things can happen, baby. People like that sometimes abuse their power. So I don't have any power? You have more than you know, but in moments like that, I... She swallows. I need you to act as if you don't have any. Once you're safely out of the situation, then we'll handle it. But I need you safely out of the situation, okay? This is like that talk she gave me about the cops. Do whatever they tell you to do, she said. Don't make them think you're a threat. Basically, weaken myself and take whatever's thrown at me so I can survive that moment. I'm starting to think it doesn't matter what I do. I'll still be whatever people think I am. They're always on my case at that school. I know, Jay says. And it's not fair, but you only have to get through 2 more years, baby. All these incidents. We can't risk you getting expelled, Bree. If that means keeping your mouth shut, I need you to do it. I can't speak up for myself. You pick your battles, she says. Not everything deserves a comment or an eye roll or an attitude. I'm not the only one who does that stuff. No, but girls like you are the only ones getting hits on their permanent record. The car goes quiet. Jay sighs out of her nose. Sometimes the rules are different for black folks, baby, she says. Hell, sometimes they're playing checkers while we're in a complicated-ass chess game. It's an awful fact of life, but it's a fact. Midtown is unfortunately one of those places where you not only gotta play chess, but you gotta play it by a different set of rules. I hate this shit. I don't want to go back there. I understand. But we don't have any other options. Why can't I go to Garden High? Because your daddy and I swore that you and Trey would never step foot in that school, she says. You think the guards are bad at Midtown? They have actual cops at Garden High, Bree. The damn school is treated like a prison. They don't set anybody up to succeed. Say what you want about Midtown,
but you've got a better chance there.
A better chance at what? Getting tossed around like a rag doll?
A better chance at making it.
She's louder than me. She takes a deep breath.
You're gonna face a whole lot of Longs and Tates in your life, baby. More than I'd like. But you never let their actions determine what you do. The moment you do, you've given them the power. You hear me?
Yeah, but does she hear me? Neither of us speaks for the longest.
I wish I could give you more options, baby. I do. We don't have any. Especially right now.
Especially right now. I look over at her.
Did something happen?
She shifts in her seat a little.
Why you say that?
Miss Clark called the church. They said you don't work there anymore.
Brianna, let's not talk about... Oh, God.
You lost your job?
This is temporary, okay?
You lost your job?
She swallows.
Yes, I did.
Oh, no.
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 No!
The church daycare got damaged during the riots, and the insurance company isn't covering the damages, she says. Pastor and the elders board had to adjust the budget in order to pay for repairs. So they let me go.
Shit.
I'm not stupid. Jay tries to act like everything's all good, but we're struggling.
We already don't have gas. Last month we got an eviction notice.
Jay used most of her check to cover the rent, and we ate sandwiches until her next payday.
But if she lost her job, she won't have a payday. If she doesn't have a payday, we might not ever have gas again.
Or food. Or a house.
What if...
Don't worry, Bree, Jay says. God's got us, baby.
The same God who let her get laid off from a church?
I've been going on interviews, she says. Left one to pick you up, actually. Plus, I've already filed for unemployment. It's not a lot, but it's something.
She's already filed?
How long have you been away from the church?
That's not important.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not, she says. Trey and I are taking care of things.
Trey knew?
She opens and closes her mouth a couple of times.
Yes.
Figures. When the gas got cut off, Trey knew it was going to happen. I found out when I woke up in a cold house. The eviction notice? Trey knew. I found out when I overheard them talking about it. I wish it didn't bother me, but it does. It's like Jay doesn't trust me enough to tell me the important stuff. Like she thinks I'm too young to handle it. I handled her being gone for years. I can handle more than she thinks.
She parks in our driveway behind Trey's old Honda Civic, then turns toward me, but I look out my window.
Okay, maybe I am a little bit immature. Whatever.
I know you're worried, she says. Things have been tough for a while, but it's gonna get better. Somehow, some way.
We gotta believe that, baby.
She reaches for my cheek. I move away and open my door. I'm going for a walk. Jay grabs my arm.
Brianna, wait.
I'm shaking. Here I am, worried about real problems, and she wants me to believe?
Please, let me go.
No, I'm not letting you run instead of talk to me. Today's been a lot, baby.
I'm fine.
She runs her thumb along my arm, like she's trying to coax the tears out of me.
No, you're not.
It's okay if you're not.
You do know you don't have to be strong all the time, right?
Maybe not all the time, but I have to be right now. I tug away from her.
I'm fine.
Brianna. I throw my hoodie over my head and march down the sidewalk.
Sometimes I dream that I'm drowning. It's always in a big blue ocean that's too deep for me to see the bottom. But I tell myself I'm not going to die, no matter how much water gets in my lungs or how deep I sink. I am not going to die. Because I say so. Suddenly, I can breathe underwater. I can swim. The ocean isn't so scary anymore. It's actually kind of cool. I even learn how to control it. But I am awake. I'm drowning, and I don't know how to control any of this. 6. The Maple Grove projects are a whole different world. I live on the east side of the garden, where the houses are nicer, the homeowners are older, and the gunshots aren't as frequent. The Maple Grove projects are a 15-minute walk away on the west side, or as Grandma calls it, that old rough side. It's on the news more, and so many of the houses look like nobody should live in them. But it's kind of like saying one side of the Death Star is safer than the other. It's still the goddamn Death Star. At Maple Grove, 6 three-story buildings sit close enough to the freeway that Aunt Pooh says they used to go on the rooftops and throw rocks at the cars. Badasses. There was a 7th building, but it burned down a few years ago. And instead of rebuilding it, the state tore it down. Now there's a grassy field in its place where kids go play. The playground is for junkies.
What up, Lil Law?
A guy shouts from inside a raggedy car as I cross the parking lot. Never seen him in my life, but I wave. I'll always be my dad's daughter, if nothing else. He should be here. Maybe if he was, I wouldn't be wondering how we're gonna make it, since Jay doesn't have a job. I swear, we can never just be good. Something always happens. Either we barely got food, or this thing got shut off. It's always something. We can't have any power, either. I mean, think about it. All these people I've never met have way more control over my life than I've ever had. If some crown hadn't killed my dad, he'd be a big rap star, and money wouldn't be an issue. If some drug dealer hadn't sold my mom her first hit, she could have gotten her degree already and would have a good job. If that cop hadn't murdered that boy, people wouldn't have rioted, the daycare wouldn't have burned down, and the church wouldn't have let Jay go. All these folks I've never met became gods over my life. Now I gotta take the power back. I'm hoping Aunt Pooh knows how. A boy zooms toward me on a dirt bike, wearing a Celtics jersey with a hoodie underneath, clear beads on his braids. He hits the brakes just inches away from me. Inches!
Boy, I swear if you would have hit me, I say.
Jojo snickers.
I wasn't gonna hit you.
Jojo can't be any more than 10. He lives with his mama in the apartment right above Aunt Pooh's. He makes it his business to speak to me every time I'm over here. Aunt Pooh thinks he has a crush on me, but nah. I think he just wants somebody to talk to. He'll hit me up for candy, too, like today.
You got some king-size Skittles, Bree?
He asks. Yep. $2.
$2? That's expensive as hell.
This little boy's got a whole bunch of money pinned to the front of his jersey. It must be his birthday, and he's got the nerve to complain about my prices? 1, watch your mouth, I tell him. 2, that's the same price they are at the store. 3, why you not in school? He pops a wheelie.
Why you not in school?
Fair enough. I slide off my backpack. You know what? Since it's your birthday, I'm gonna go against my own rules and let you have a pack for free. The second I hand them over, he rips them open and pours a bunch into his mouth. I tilt my head.
Well?
Thank you, he says, with a mouthful. We gotta work on your manners, for real. Jojo follows me to the courtyard. It's mostly dirt now, thanks to the cars that people have parked there. like the one Aunt Pooh and her homeboy Scrap sit on. Scrap's hair is half braided, half afro, like he got up in the middle of it getting braided to go do something else. Knowing Scrap, he did. His socks poke out of his flip-flops, and he shoves huge spoonfuls of cereal into his mouth from a mixing bowl. He and Aunt Pooh talk to the other GDs standing around them. Aunt Pooh sees me and hops off the car.
Why the hell you ain't in school?
Scrap and the GDs nod at me like I'm one of the guys. I get that a lot. I got suspended, I tell Aunt Pooh.
Again? For what?
I hop up on the car beside Scrap. Some BS. I tell them everything, from how security loves to target black and brown kids, to how they pinned me to the ground. The GDs shake their heads. Aunt Pooh looks like she wants blood. JoJo claims he would have whooped them guards' ass, which makes everybody but me laugh. You wouldn't have done nothing, boy, I say.
On my mama.
Aunt Pooh claps her hands with each word.
On my mama, they messed with the wrong one. Point them out and I'll handle them fools.
Aunt Pooh doesn't go from 0 to 100. She goes from chill to ready to kill. But I don't want to have her in prison over Long and Tate. They're not worth it, Auntie.
How much time you get, Bree?
Scrap asks. Damn. He makes it sound like I'm going to prison. 3 days.
That ain't bad, he says. They take your candy?
Nah, why?
Let me get some Starburst, then.
That'll be $1, I tell him.
I ain't got cash. I can pay you tomorrow, though.
This fool did not. Then you can get the Starburst tomorrow.
God damn, it's just $1.
Scrap says.
Goddamn, it's just 24 hours,
I say, in my best Scrap voice. Aunt Pooh and the others crack up.
I don't do credit. That's against the 10 snack commandments, bruh.
The what?
He says. Yo, that shit.
Aunt Pooh backhands my arm.
Y'all, she redid Big's 10 crack commandments. It's dope as hell, too. Bree, spit that shit.
This is how it goes. I let Aunt Pooh hear some rhymes I wrote. She gets so hype over them that she tells me to rap them for her friends. Trust, if you're whack, a gangbanger will be the first to let you know. All right. I throw my hoodie on. Aunt Pooh pounds out a rhythm on the hood of the car. More people in the courtyard drift over. I nod along. Just like that, I'm in my zone.
I've been at this game for months, and the money's been gradual, so I made some rules, using Big's manual. A couple of steps unique for me to keep my game on track while I sell these snacks. Rule numero uno, never let no one know how much cash I stack, cause it's fact that cheddar breeds jealousy, especially when it comes to basics. They'll be quick to take it. Number two, never tell folks my next move. Don't you know competition got a mission and ambition to make exactly what I'm getting? They'll be at my spots where it's hot with plans to open up shop. Number three, I only trust Sunny and Leek. Little kids will set my ass up, properly gassed up, hooded and masked up. Huh, for a couple bucks, stick me up on playgrounds when no one's around. Number four is actually important the more. No eating the stash while I'm making the cash. Number five, never sell no junk where I bunk. I don't care if they want some chips, tell them dip. Number six, them things called refunds, see none. Make the sale, take the bills, let them bail and be done. Seven, this rule gets people up in arms, but no credit or discounts, not even for my mom. Family and biz don't gel like bubble guts and Taco Bell. Find myself saying, what the hell? Number eight, never keep no profits in my pockets and wallets. Deposit or buy a safe and lock it. Number nine is just as bad as number one to me. No matter where I'm at, keep an eye for police. If they thinking I'm suspicious, they ain't trying to listen. They'll unload them mags, make me a hashtag. Number 10, two words. Perfect timing. I want some lines then, do early grinding. Missing out on clientele, that's a hell no. If they don't see me out, they going straight to the store.
Using these steps, I'll have cash out the anus to get what I need and help out with bill payments and sell more cookies than that famous named Amos on my mom and on my dad and word to Big, one of the greatest. What? I finish. A collective, oh, goes up. JoJo's mouth is